Blog Talk Radio.
Today is the continued existence
of a system which stares him in the face almost every day, saying, you are less than, you are not equal to. And I refer to the system of segregation. The tragedy of the system of segregation is that it not only harms one physically and makes for physical inconveniences, but it does something to the soul. It gives the segregator a false sense of superiority, and it leaves the segregated with a false sense of inferiority. So that this is one of the things that probably the major problem that the Negro confronts in the South in his struggle for freedom and human dignity, the continued existence of this system and the resistance of forces that are not really in line with the struggle for freedom, forces that are enemies to democracy. So that on the one hand, that is the system. On the other hand, that is the strong resistance of forces that would say they will never comply with the law of the land. And their legislative halls ring loud with such words as interposition and nullification, so that we see this defiance. Now, I don't want to give the impression that there has been no progress in this area. Certainly, the system is gradually breaking down, and this, I think, is a very hopeful sign. And as the system breaks down, it makes it better, and it makes it possible, in a greater sense, for the Negro to achieve the freedom, which is his aim and his goal.
Have there been, Dr. King, any historical facts within the past decade that you would say has been most effective in strengthening the Negro's zeal for achieving first-class citizenship?
Yes, I...
For instance, the Supreme Court decision.
Sure.
I
think so. I think the Supreme Court's decision in 1954 did a great deal to give the Negro a new sense of hope and also a new sense of dignity and self-respect. I think this was one of the greatest forces in this decade, or certainly in this century, to give the Negro a new determination and a new inner sense of dignity and a new sense of destiny. Not only that, I think world opinion, the rolling tide of world opinion, has had a lot to do with the new sense of dignity of the Negro. The fact that we've had an independent struggle in so many countries in Asia and so many countries in Africa, I think gave the Negro a new sense of worth. And all of these forces have conjoined to make for a real sense of hope and a real sense of dignity on the part of the Negro.
It's interesting to many of the students of the problem of minority groups in this country that the Supreme Court decision, as it seeks to remove segregation from the schools of the South, does not deal with something of a counterpart in northern communities. That is that unless we are quite careful to break down the racial ghettos which exist in the North, the North has the real potential of having a more firmly entrenched segregated school system based on neighborhood segregation in the South. Now, does that suggest some particular approaches for northern communities?
I think so. I think it is quite true that in the North you have potential for great racial conflict and certainly a type of segregation that is not legally enhanced, but has subtle and hidden forms, which in many instances are much more difficult to get at. This housing problem, which is a national problem, is one of the most difficult problems we face in the nation. And I think we have a great responsibility. I mean, all Americans have a great responsibility to seek to eliminate discrimination in public and private housing. because so long as you have that, you will never have truly integrated schools, and you will never have a truly integrated society. No section of the country can boast of clean hands in the area of brotherhood. Some sections are better in the sense that they do not have the problem as intensified as other sections, and some sections are better in the sense that they do not have the system legally endorsed as you do in the South. But at least we do find it in all areas of our nation in some form. And this places before all of us a tremendous moral responsibility, because injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
One of the great law cases decided by the Supreme Court of the United States around 1950 was one which made unenforceable restrictive covenants, which made it not unconstitutional but unenforceable in the courts, for these covenants to be enforced. And yet, even with this decision, there still is restrictive covenant mindedness. And what we are witnessing now is that the law alone is not sufficient to overcome these sort of fixed attitudes towards people and practices in dealing with people in our American communities. Now, since 1954, we have witnessed considerable migration of Negroes from the South to Western, Midwestern, and Northern cities, and also some immigration from Puerto Rico, Puerto Ricans, into some of the Eastern seaport cities like New York, Philadelphia, and Jersey City. Does this in-migration of rural, sometimes agricultural, Negroes and Puerto Ricans to northern industrial communities pose any particular problem for these areas and for the leadership of the minority groups in these particular cities?
I think so. I think wherever you have a good deal of migration, you do have some problems emerging. And I'm sure in our large urban areas in the United States, there's a good deal of migration taking place daily and weekly and monthly. There are some new problems created. There is always this problem of urban dislocation, and this happens to individuals of minority groups, which poses for the leaders in urban communities, a real responsibility to help the individuals moving in adjust to urban life and to new situations. I think also that as we seek to help these individuals adjust, we must see that the system itself is changed to the point that there will be no discrimination in employment and that type of thing. So that these people will not face the problem of finding doors shut in their faces every time they make a move. This type of thing creates within the individual a sense of bitterness, and it often drives the individual to criminal habits and other things that tend to distort the total structure of society. So on the one hand, we need good leadership to help people adjust to urban life as they move in from situations, rural situations often. On the other hand, the community at large must see that these people gain equality of opportunity in the area of employment and in the educational area, so that they will not develop these internal attitudes of bitterness, and they will not develop criminal habits, which tend to grow out of a sense of frustration, poverty, and ignorance. I think so often we fail to see that poverty and ignorance breed crime, whatever the racial Indeed. So these things are environmental and not racial.
Dr. King, you're well aware and acquainted with the work of such organizations as the National Urban League and other voluntary associations which around 1910 tried to almost single-handedly grapple with these problems of in-migrant into the community. Now, some of the students of urban problems are beginning to say that this matter has reached such tremendous dimensions and proportions that in addition to voluntary organizations, there is the need for an assumption of responsibility by governmental agencies, commissions, and other committees created by executive order or by legislative actions of city councils or state legislatures. Do you have anything to say to us about the advisability and the desirability of government assuming a constructive, affirmative role in dealing with not only the problem of in-migration and adjustment in the modern urban community, but for really seeing to it that the constitutional rights of all of the citizens are observed in several and many areas?
Yes, I definitely feel that government has a great role to play and a great responsibility in this whole area and in this period of transition. Local governmental agencies, state governmental agencies, and also the federal government. I think what we have seen in the civil rights struggle in general and in the quest for freedom is the fact that the federal government, for instance, hasn't used all of its resources and all of the things, the constitutional powers available to enforce the law of the land. So that I think a more definite role, a more positive role, rather, should be played by the federal government and local governmental agencies in every state in the union and in every city, to take a more definite stand, because all of these agencies will have to work together if we are to achieve a truly integrated society.
One of the very interesting facets of this problem that many people have raised questions about is whether or not, as a result of the persecutions and denials of opportunities to which Negroes have been subjected, if they have antipathy towards or even hatred for members of the majority group. Is there anything in the religious and spiritual background or even, let us say, the relationships which developed in the plantation economy between Negroes and whites which have bearing or effect on this particular facet of the situation?
Well, I have no doubt that the system of segregation and the system of slavery which preceded that did a great deal to cause the Negro to develop some attitudes of antipathy or some bitterness even toward the majority group. I don't say this was true of all Negroes. It isn't true today and it wasn't true in years gone by. But I'm sure that in any situation where you have an oppressor standing over an oppressed group, the individuals in the oppressed group tend to develop, they are at least capable of developing, an attitude of bitterness toward the oppressor. However, I think we are seeing some very hopeful signs in this area. There are many people, many leaders in our country and over the world who are saying to members of oppressed groups that you can never solve the problem by meeting hate with hate, because to hate for hate only intensifies the existence of hate in the universe, and somebody must have sense enough and morality enough to cut off the chain of hate. So that there is this emphasis that we must avoid not only external violence, physical violence, but also internal violence of spirit. And I think if the leadership in the Negro community all over the nation will take this attitude and urge people in the Negro community, and if leaders all over the world will take this attitude, we will be able to save the vast majority of people from the type of bitterness that can invade and infiltrate the life of the individuals in the oppressed group.
Isn't it true also, Dr. King, that hate, when kept within the individual, tends to destroy him, and if not destroy him, it certainly interferes with his ongoing processes, and it has something of a paralytic effect on his organizing himself for any constructive action.
I think that's quite true, and modern psychology is saying that a great deal now, that hate is as injurious to the hater as it is to the hated. It is as pernicious to the subject of hate as it is to the object of hate. So we do have a responsibility to get this over to everybody, that hate is a cancerous disease that ultimately destroys both the hater and the hated in the process, if not physically, certainly spiritually and psychologically.
One of the great moving factors which you have from time to time advocated, Dr. King, is this philosophy of love being the most important and effective agent for dealing with social problems, even discrimination. I wonder if you would discuss that for us briefly.
Yes, I would be very happy to. I think one of the problems that oppressed people always confront is the problem of how one can stand up and resist the forces of evil. And there's always the feeling on the part of some that there is no way to resist evil without hating the evildoer and using violence to destroy the forces of evil. But I am of the opinion, and this grows out of my Christian background as well as my study of Mahatma Gandhi, who used the method of nonviolent resistance on the larger scale that it has been used in the modern world. I'm of the opinion that it is possible for one to stand firmly and courageously against an evil system and yet not use violence to stand up against it and also not hate in the process. It is possible to love the individual who does the evil deed while hating the deed that the person does. This lifts one to a new level of understanding, a new level of goodwill, and I believe firmly that love in this sense, which I think of as creative, redemptive goodwill for all men. I'm not talking about a sentimental, weak love, but I'm talking about a strong love that organizes itself in mass nonviolent action, but at the same time sees within every man something of the image of God and sees within every man great and vast possibilities for goodness that maybe the individual himself has never realized. And when one rises to this point, he loves every man because God loves him, and he sees great dimensions for change and promise within him.
We hear so much from those who want to see no change in the relationships between whites and Negroes that what you really see today in this press towards freedom is the action of people who are subversive. They even call them communists, that the Supreme Court might be communist. Is this nothing more than a kind of red herring being drawn across the scene in order to distort the situation and divert the constructive forces from aligning itself with this movement?
Yes, I think that is exactly what it is. One of the favorite devices of the reactionary has been to tend to smear any liberal voice or all of the liberal voices in order to silence them. But we know full well that these forces that have stood up for brotherhood have done more to defeat communism in our nation than almost anything else you can point to. I'm sure that the Supreme Court decision, which was rendered in 1954, did a great deal to defeat the forces of communism and communism in our nation, and I'm sure it did a great deal to develop new understanding and new respect for America on the part of people in other nations. And these are the things which break down the influence of communism in the world, because communism often thrives on this very thing. So the more we can break down discrimination and segregation, the more we build up the forces of democracy and the more we demonstrate the validity of the democratic way to the peoples of the world. This is the most powerful weapon we have against communism.
Now, we've talked considerably about the responsibility which the Negro and Negro leadership has for bringing about first-class citizenship and removing the cancerous presence of segregation and discrimination. But is there not some high responsibility which attaches to the dominant white community for lending its hand and giving its heart to this problem of the removal of segregation and bringing in this era of a society of free men for all men?
Yes, I think that is a great role and a great responsibility facing the members of the dominant group in our nation. For if you do not get this courageous, forthright stand from people in the dominant group, you cannot expect to achieve the ideals and goals of an integrated society. And as I've said so often, the festering sore of segregation debilitates the white man as well as the Negro.
Listening to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King in a rare, lost, they say, even archived PBS video with a heavyweight, apparently a lawyer out there. I'm going to get his name. What I'm going to do is I'm going to post a link on our website, and you can go to our URL at www.eastnewyorkmanagement.net. Again, our URL is www.eastnewyorkmanagement.net, and you can listen to this fascinating interview in its entirety. Have a great week.
Yeah. shot. Water bottle before I hit full throttle. Just a sip cause the cramp could cause problems. I part low so I turn up the volume. Gliding down the strip with no hands, people around too. But I don't even notice none of that. I'm more focused on the road, plus the music in the backpack. Grind, that's the sound of me pedaling. Roll the rock through park and suit in Maryland. Cruise control down the hill, keep rolling. Had to pause for a moment until I heard the phone ring. I bet I'm on the way, but this journey.